speaking of analysis on what's happening in this world of ours, Malcolm Honlein is Executive Vice Chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, joins us for the weekly update here at JMM, a much-anticipated weekly update with all the events this week, especially the POTUS, the President of the United States, visiting the Holy Land. Mr. Honlein, welcome back to JM in the AM.
Thank you. I didn't know you were on a first-name basis with him. Good to hear.
First abbreviation basis. By the way, folks, we're having a and this we know about, so it'll be fixed by next week or in a couple of weeks. We're having a drop of a volume problem with our phone connection, so turn your radio up so you could hear Mr. Honlein at the appropriate volume. Malcolm, we mourn the loss of Rabbi Herschel Schachter, the chaplain, as we always qualify because of other rabbinic leaders with the same name. Rabbi Schachter, who you could tell us certainly more about, served as the chairman of the Conference of Presidents for a stint, just passed away. The funeral, I believe, taking place today. How do you remember him?
Well, first of all, I had a very close personal relationship with him, and he served as chairman of the conference many years before I got there, but I worked with him in his various capacities. He was the Jewish chaplain who entered Buchenwald, and I think, in fact, discovered Rabbi Lau. I remember him and Naftali Lau talking about it.
Wow.
And mentioning it. He held many positions. He was president of Mizrahi, and as you said, chairman of the conference.
Right.
President of the chaplain's board, and many, many positions in Jewish life, in addition to his teaching at Yeshiva University. And he has been ill for many years, but he was a dynamic speaker. And during his chairmanship, there were a number of critical issues that came up involving the President of the United States and others, and he was a stalwart spokesman, and we mourn his passing and wish his family nechama.
Yeah, no question. In my house growing up, his name was always brought up with great reverence, and when you talk about someone who was able to present to any type of group. He was absolutely an amazing communicator, and he will certainly be missed. Our condolences to the entire Schachter family. All right, a big week, Malcolm, in terms of news, and we know primarily why. It's because the President of the United States did, in fact, embark on the trip to Israel, a very, very interesting trip, to say the least. The Israeli media, according to what I have seen, has been treating the president royally, meaning that as they write about the trip and analyze it on TV and radio, they're speaking about him in glowing terms. And it seems, according to some, that based on the media reaction, Israelis have sort of changed their mind a little bit about President Obama. Would you say he accomplished that this week?
Well, I do think that was his primary goal, and as I said in some interviews, which those who can't read didn't understand, that the president is really good on the campaign stump, as we know here in the United States. And his purpose, first and foremost, was to talk to the people of Israel. And when he said it, people didn't believe it. And the reason for it could be for the future. A, he is at 10% in the polls. I think after the visit, that number will dramatically change. Second, he knows from previous administrations, especially the Clinton administration, that when they wanted to get things done that weren't necessarily in concert with what the government of Israel wanted, they were able to leapfrog to go directly to the people, to appeal to the people. And that's what he did yesterday, especially in his discussion with the young people about responsibility for peace, etc. So I think that was goal one. Two, I think he was tired of the question about why he hadn't gone, so now he's answered the question. And I think he did it early on when there weren't issues. In the first administration, he was told, don't go unless you have a package, a peace process, something. And this time, I think the conclusion was it's better to go when you don't have the encumbrances, to be able to try to reset the relationship with the prime minister, with the government, and meet the new government, appeal directly to some of the new parties there, and to be able to discuss the critical issues, Iran, the changes in the region, certainly the fighting in Syria, the danger of a chemical weapons, et cetera. I mean, such a panoply of issues that confront Israel and the Middle East today. So I think those are largely the background for his visit.
Now, it seemed, and I guess they, you know, made a concerted effort, both of them, but it seemed that both the Prime Minister and the President really got along well. Like, they seemed a little bit more chummy than in other encounters that we've seen in Washington.
Oh, this was clearly a deliberate decision, and I think that some of the tensions or differences are exaggerated when you put it in the total context of the U.S.-Israel relationship, which is much more, there are many more aspects, there are many more facets to it. In fact, the President, during the visit, announced that they would begin talks about aid beyond 2017, when the current 10-year arrangement for aid is scheduled to end. And if you remember, President Bush signed the deal, which over the period of time phased out economic aid, but phased in annual increases in military assistance, and of course the promise not to cut aid to Iron Dome and to keep American aid basically untouched for that when there'll be many other cuts.
And excuse my ignorance, that's purely a White House decision, or there's a congressional element, or what?
You know, Congress will have to approve it, certainly, but
right.
Congressional support, 77 senators sent a letter telling him, you know, to stand by Israel, and obviously Iron Dome has become symbolic of what everybody agrees is a very extensive military security intelligence relationship. I think that also his message to Abbas about stopping business at the UN, he obviously endorsed strongly a Palestinian state. He said other things, talking about settlers' crimes, which aroused some negative reaction and concern, but not in the audience, which seemed to be somewhat selective at Binyan Ayoma, when students from Ariel elsewhere were not included. But I don't know the process by which tickets were given out, but certainly the response to him was very strong, and that again is his strength in dealing with this stuff. He made statements on Iran, but it was not consistent completely with what Netanyahu was saying. There are still differences, and if you look at the order, the Netanyahu spoke first of Iran, then Syria, then Palestinian issues, and the President spoke about the Palestinian issues, Syria, and then Iran. And still there is a difference over the timetable, which they acknowledged, but the goal, they said, is the same. Both want to prevent, the one says that the President talks about a year, and the Prime Minister speaks about the summer, autumn. He's moved his timetable forward a longer somewhat. So they essentially agree on it, but there's a difference, and the question is the red line disappearing? The recognition that Israel faces the dangers from the south and the north and the Hezbollah, but its role in stopping the jihad is a critical factor in terms of the stability of the Middle East. What was important this time was his recognition of the 3,000 years of Jewish history, which he did not do in the Cairo speech, if you remember.
Right.
That was significant, going to Herzl's grave, as well as Netanyahu's brother Yoni's grave, I think also, and then to Rabin's grave. And, of course, he's visiting Yad Vashem today, and he actually ran into a sandstorm, so his plans had to be changed. So his visit to Bethlehem was both delayed because of the storm, and then they said he was going to drive, which means that Route 1 will be closed. I think they said from 1:30 to 4 today. It was closed, which on an Arab Shabbos is not good news for a lot of people.
So originally he was supposed to go to the airport by helicopter, and I guess he ends up having to drive because of the storm.
When you see those sandstorms, they were common this week in the Middle East. They're often blinding, and certainly for helicopters, very problematic. And the news that John Kerry would return Saturday night to continue discussions, and the President indicated that he would be spending a lot of his time, I think is probably the longer term significance of this. The Palestinians issue, I mean, I think the relevance of it, the intensity of the presentation, I think, was more or less in keeping with what been understood, especially as five Qassam rockets came over from Gaza into Israel.
All right, we got to slow down for a second. There's so many little aspects here I got to ask you about. It's America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard and listeners sponsored, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, Rockland County at 91.9 on the FM dial, around the world on the web at jmnam.org. Let's start with that. Tell me about the timing. I mean, there's no such thing as a coincidence when it comes to this, right? The enemy specifically wanted to hit Sderot with Obama in the country.
Well, it was a message, and the question is who was responsible. The latest information I have is that it was Hamas that did it, and it was to send a message, not to be, that they can't be disregarded. That the president going to see Abbas is more of an issue, I think, for them than is going to see Netanyahu. So this is a message that they don't want to be forgotten.
Right. Don't forget to keep us on the agenda, huh? That type of thing. Did he get a tour of Iron Dome? Did he actually get what was spoken about in advance, that he would see the defense system up close?
Yes, he did go directly to the Iron Dome. When he landed, it was not far away at the airport, and this was the unit. I spoke to Dr. Gold, who was the father of Iron Dome, last night, and he said this was a unit that protected Tel Aviv, or protects Tel Aviv.
Right.
And there is, and we should take a moment on this, because I know a lot of people asked me yesterday about the reports that the Iron Dome was not effective.
Right.
Kill rate
we saw that,
lower.
Right.
Dr. Gold told me that the kill rate was 86%, that between 85 and 90, but many of the reports said 86, that it in fact was effective, and that the statistics that Israel offered were accurate.
So he sees the defense system, and of course the enemy sends these rockets. Is it the Israeli media who's responsible for not making enough of a big deal about this, that they have the nerve to attack an Israeli city with the President of the United States in town?
I think that people did take note of it, but you have so much media frenzy going on around the visit and the occupation of the whole country with the visit. The rockets were noted, and the president did speak pretty forthrightly about the issue of the security of Israel's borders. I think that there was note taken. I can't say that it received all the attention that it should, but I think that in part they don't want to make Hamas central in the picture today.
Right, and also you alluded to the whole who was at Binyan Ehoma when he addressed it. The truth is that, just to be fair, that even, I don't know if the crowd was weighted or not, and we'll never really know, I guess, the real procedure of who was there. But the truth is, the President of the United States is there saying, mostly things that everybody there, especially the youth, wants to hear. Even those who don't totally agree with him on everything, usually you get caught up in the frenzy of the moment, no matter what.
Absolutely. Look, the President of the United States, and especially one who, as I said before, is so good on in connecting to people on the stump, and I think for young Israelis it was particularly exciting, and is understandably so. So, and most of what he said was very strong. I mean, look, his recognition of Herzl talking about Zionism, his mention of many other issues. There were a lot of very positive statements in his speeches, and I've spoken to Israelis from across the political spectrum, and their reaction almost universally, I mean, there were certain things they didn't like, his reference to the crimes, or some people felt equating, and some of his references obviously to some members or sectors of the society or political spectrum were not what they wanted to hear. But overall, there was no one who didn't acknowledge that this was a very strong statement.
Tell me about the, now that the trip is coming to an end, tell me about the efforts to release Jonathan Pollard. How would you evaluate the strong action that has been taken over the last few weeks by so many people, including many people in this audience, to try to secure his release? I think it was unrealistic to think that he would be on the plane with President Obama. I think you agree with that was probably unrealistic, but was this in fact the best shot, and was the best shot given by the Jewish community this time around?
I think that everything possible was done. I don't know if you saw the the Jerusalem Post did a remarkable editorial.
Yeah, that's going around everywhere, yes.
Which was based on a letter that we put together, and I got 30 organizations in the conference to sign to the president, noting that on April 8th will be his 10,000th day in prison.
Right.
It's not imaginable. I don't know how somebody sustains it, and after 7 years in solitary, and we appeal to the president, not because we believe he would be released in this context. I did not, but I do believe that we have to continue to make the case. I hope that the review process to which the president made reference, will, and I raised this at the meeting with the president, obviously, when we saw him 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago. Look, we just have to keep trying, and we have to keep the pressure up, and hopefully that there will be a review. I don't know, and people ask me all the time, but what's the reason why they keep it? Even foreign leaders sometimes ask me about it, and I tell them that I just don't have an answer anymore. I don't know that anybody has an answer anymore, except that, you know, there's this
right.
Lasting grudge for what he did and admits he did and has expressed contrition and remorse for it.
And off the air, you've actually told us, not to reveal too much, but off the air, you've told us about people who everybody out there would be shocked to hear have said to you, why on earth is he still being held?
Yes, and people even in the government,
right.
The current government, have asked me.
they want you to explain it. It's so funny.
Asking me honestly, is there a reason? Is there something? And I have talked to anybody and everybody.
Right.
Just don't know.
All right, so we know what the trip did include, because there's so much press, and people have been following the videos and the speeches and all the different photo ops. The Prime Minister escorted him to a lot of different places, including the Israel Museum. I believe the Prime Minister was with him at that visit, if I'm not mistaken. What about briefings on security, on Iran, on Syria? Did he have an opportunity to meet with high-level officials who could be convincing to the President of the United States in terms of what type of situation Israel is dealing with its neighbors?
Look, the most important discussions on this were the private discussions between the Prime Minister and the President, and those were in four eyes. And I don't know the outcome. I don't know that anybody outside of the two of them know the real truth on what they agreed on. With the public statements focused on the areas of agreement, but noted that while there's differences in capabilities and differences in timetable, which we've discussed here in depth, you see that the Iranian leader Khamenei threatened to raise Tel Aviv and Haifa, etc., and even sent signals that they're not opposed to direct talks with the United States. They made other statements, both bombastic, but also some trying to keep the door open. And the Senate is moving to target Iranians doing business in euros and other new sanctions. So I don't think the Iranians can take any comfort from the statements. And I think that the president has to know that the latest poll showed that 64% of Americans favor stopping Iran's nuclear weapons advancement and the capability, but even using military means. Well, this is a time when the country is certainly seeking to withdraw from Afghanistan and Iraq and is war-weary, they say, when 64% are saying that even using military means, I think it's a remarkable statement.
Right.
And with the election coming up in Iran, that we're seeing already, you know, internal divisions, and the president alluded to that as well. So unfortunately, Iran in the course of this sort of got sidetracked. But the activities and the efforts have to be recognized. And some of the stories that came out about the United States having a pinpoint attack plan. I know the president said that when he came to office, he ordered that they develop plans. He said, I don't want to hear when the time comes that we're not ready. And I think that's why the references to the United States having plans, as does Israel. And again, Netanyahu stressed and in the public arena with the president that the president's recognition of Israel's right to defend itself and the need for it to make its own decisions in regard to an attack should Israel deem it essential.
When Iranian officials start pointing out the cities that they plan on attacking, if Israel, in fact, would try some type of military action against them. Does the Prime Minister of Israel need to respond to that or not?
Can't respond every time. This is not Khomeini has, in fact, gone on television with a map showing the cities, individual cities, and that was available on the internet. People saw it. I don't think, no, and I think he doesn't want to give him more attention, and the Khomeini's interest, obviously, is also to continue to be in the sphere, and when all of these attacks against Iran and the growing mobilization in the Middle East, he's going to hear it from King Abdullah very strongly, and he's hearing it from other allies of the United States in the region very strongly that they want action. But when the president talked about the strategic relationship, you know, he said that they do it because Israel's a strategic interest, the support for Israel of the United States. It's not the moral and other historical ties. That's a very important message because more and more in the world, in the Middle East, they're looking to Israel as a strategic ally, and they feel, many of them feel, that the timetable is very short, and the necessity for somebody to take action before Iran, which is engaging in activities all over, we hear it more and more in Africa, we hear it in Latin America, we hear it in Asia, their activities to undermine regimes like Bahrain or Saudi Arabia, the Gulf countries, to their activities in virtually all of the countries. I mean, they're there wherever there is a situation of unrest. You know, we don't even get the full story here. The American press doesn't report it. Maybe they don't get it. But people want to see now, will the U.S. act decisively? Will the words be matched by deeds, as we have with the sanctions? And everybody agrees the sanctions alone are not going to do it. The president put the military option squarely on the table. And now we have additional threats. If you remember, I talked about 2 weeks ago about the Iraq plant, the plutonium plant, which is an alternative means for developing a nuclear weapon other than enriched uranium. All of a sudden now, in the last 2-3 days, people are beginning to recognize what I reported there, which is satellite pictures showing that it was being activated again. So they're not holding back. They're moving ahead all the time.
And the president did say that he would prefer to do this all with diplomacy, but obviously, as you just said, kept the military option on the table. But he always starts...
The credibility of it. Do the Iranians think it's credible? It's not what we say. It's what do they hear. Do they believe it? Do they honestly see that this option is a credible one.
Right. By the way, I'm so curious about some of the details about the trip. Obviously, he's greeted by the president and the prime minister. We know that. Does he meet with any other members of the cabinet? Is anybody else, you know, get to have a discussion with the president of the United States while he's there, or it's essentially those two?
Oh, well, first of all, there were members at the airport where a number of them raised Jonathan Pollard. But at the dinner, at the prime minister's, Bennett and Lapid were present. I think there were one or two others, maybe Moshe Yaalon. But I do know that Bennett and Lapid were invited, and I guess Tzipi Livni were invited to the dinner at his home.
By the way, and we haven't even spoken about the fact that Israel now officially has a government, right? It is official now, Malcolm?
As official as it gets.
As official as it gets. I'm beginning to finally understand what happened during this election, because I spoke to a youngster, someone who's just been voting a couple of years in Israel this week. I spoke to her, and essentially her chevra, her group of friends, was committed to either Lapid or Bennett, as long as it wasn't the same old thing. And that's what you told us. You warned us about this whole sweep of change, or at least the aura of change, that was coming from young people in the electorate. And that's what it seemed. They didn't care. Yeah, you want the more the more right wing version. You have Bennett. You want the media guy. You have Lapid. But as long as it wasn't the same old thing, we're going to go for one of those two.
And Yachimovich also is a newer leader of Labor, but did not capitalize very much on it. But she did well, better than I think most people.
Right. That's true. That's true. The numbers are much better.
Represented an alternative on the spectrum, and it wasn't because I think people didn't expect Netanyahu to be prime minister. they did. I think many people voted for the other parties with the expectation that Netanyahu was going to get in anyway, and therefore they wanted to express their dissatisfaction. And it's largely on the social, the local issues, the domestic issues, some of which, you know, the divisions were...
Right. But you know what else I learned from the conversation this week? The Lieberman connection was a bad connection for him.
That he probably was hurt by it, and both parties probably got... Collectively, they would have... Separately, they would have done better than
right.
they did collectively.
Correct.
It was by the way, Obama, President Obama had a very extensive meeting, even today again, with the Prime Minister, and he updated him on his discussions with Abbas, and it ended up taking longer than anticipated, and that he then went to Bethlehem, where he visited the Church of the Nativity, and his trip will end now.
Right, he goes to Jordan, right?
But you know that the posters that were hung in Bethlehem that were defaced with swastikas, there were other acts of, in the Palestinian areas against the president's visit. There were demonstrations planned. The Palestinian security forces, I know, were cracking down. But they even say that in Bethlehem, the reaction in advance was not they didn't see the same excitement as it evolved in Israel. It wasn't long-term. That people were excited, but as it came closer, and as his visit began, if you see the change in the tone of coverage and in the intensity of coverage, even in the American press at first, the intensity grew as the visit went on.
This emailer from Israel claims that the only private meeting that President Obama had outside of the president and prime minister was, in fact, with the opposition leader, and that's Shelly Yachimovich.
He did meet with her as well, yes.
Wow. I'll tell you.
That's standard procedure.
Right, I understand. Just politics is funny, you know what I mean? Politics. And on your previous point, it's, you know, to so many people out there, we have so much, there are many suspicions about his views on Israel, and obviously to many people on the other side, he's a Zionist sympathizing president. You know, it's just funny the way things are. Now, what about the future? You just mentioned John Kerry. You talked about, you know, what might happen in terms of the Netanyahu-Abbas possibility of getting back to the table. Is the president of the United States going to use this opportunity now to become a real peace broker? Is this step one to a four-year plan to have a legacy that lands in the Middle East?
I think that we're going to see a continuation of this initiative, but more by Secretary Kerry, that the president is going to be preoccupied both with domestic concerns as well as Asia. Certainly Iran and other issues will be very serious concerns in the coming months, stuff that he can't avoid, even if he wants to, and Syria could very well come to a head at any day, and don't know what chaotic situation will emerge. We've seen a lot of developments on that front as well, which we haven't even touched on, but I believe that, as I said earlier, that was part of the reason for the visit, was to enable him to play a role. And he said in his first term he got off on the wrong foot. They made some serious mistakes. He acknowledged some of those in interviews that he gave. I think that, you know, his introduction of the settlement freeze and other ideas were backfired and were, in fact, detrimental to any prospect, because then Abbas adopted all of these things. And the president learned, like other presidents, that you can't impose this from the outside. It's got to come from the parties. And so he tried to put the onus on each side yesterday in terms of advancing it, and talked about each side's responsibilities as he saw them. So I do think that we're going to see a continuing effort, and I think Kerry, who has now 4 years, after that his political career is essentially over, he may become an ambassador, I don't know, but essentially it's over, he will want to have an accomplishment of this kind, and as I said, I think the Asian portfolio will be more the president. He will do the Middle East, he'll do Europe, he'll do other things.
Right.
We'll see more activity.
All right, a couple of last things. I know, folks, about the volume problem. I apologize. We're gonna get to it and fix it. We're having a problem with the volume level on our phone line, so you'll have to turn things up if you're listening on your radio or on the archive. A couple of last things. Did I read that there was an arrest this week in the murder of Daniel Pearl?
Yes.
That's 11 years later.
They caught somebody that the Pakistanis say was the ringleader or the leader in the murder of kidnapping and murder of Daniel Pearl. Unfortunately, we learned today that an Israeli couple were caught in the Sinai, and again, it's inexplicable that people still go despite all the warnings. Nice. But Bedouins captured them, and God willing, they'll be released and free. But yes, they did capture the guy they say is the ringleader.
Right.
It took so long, and why now is a good question.
And, yeah, 11 years later. And Malcolm, what's going on in Cyprus, and you know me when it comes to the economic stuff, I'm not top-notch on that. What's happening now in Cyprus, identical to what's been happening in other European countries, or is this a unique situation?
Look, I think what's happening in Cyprus is more severe than perhaps what's happened in other countries. And Cyprus is an island. It's got limited capacity.
Is there a relationship between Israel and Cyprus?
There are excellent relations right now between Israel and Cyprus, and especially as the relationship with Greece got better. Cyprus, which is Greek-dominated, northern Cyprus is occupied or held by the Turkish and the Turks, and it's called Turkish Cyprus. And that's why people often mock Erdogan, because when he talks about an occupation, that Syria doesn't have a problem.
That's funny.
So yes, Israel has a very close relationship, but it's been warming up, and especially with the discoveries, the oil and gas discoveries, which will enrich Cyprus at one point. Right now they're having very severe economic problems, and the collapse of the economy could be disastrous.
Finally, there's a new pope, Malcolm. Anything about his past? Because we've read a lot about his associations and stuff. Anything regarding his relationship with the Jewish community of note?
Yes, he's had a relationship. A number of people have cited he went to a Hanukkah celebration at a shul, and a number of members of the Jewish community have talked about his personal outreach and his humble style. There are questions that were raised even by a Jewish author about his role during the dark days when the people disappeared, and I think the church has tried to address it. It's one of those things I don't know if we'll ever get beyond what people right. know now, but there were questions raised. But certainly his relationship and his outreach to the Jews since he became pope, his comments and his letter to the first letter that he wrote was to Rabbi Dissinia, the chief rabbi in Italy.
Interesting.
He was a remarkable man in his own right. I thought was a tremendous gesture, and certainly was noted and noticed everywhere.
Very interesting, I'll tell you. Very interesting. All right, Malcolm, have a chag kosher v'sameach. We'll leave the message for the holiday to Rabbi Yudin, who's coming up with the Shabbos HaGadol talk, and enjoy Yontif. We reconvene Bezrat Hashem 2 weeks from today. And by the way, Malcolm, before you leave, I just want to mention, ironically enough, and I don't even know what the irony is, frankly, but you mentioned April 8th, 10,000th day of Jonathan Pollard's incarceration. That'll also be the day that this year is observed as Yom HaShoah.
That's exactly right. And I just want to leave people with something positive again. That the polls, there were three polls done in the last week or so. Each one shows support for Israel, 64% or 60%, all at really very strong numbers, and a large number wanting America to be even more pro-Israel. And if 69% say the United States should stay out of talks and leave it to the parties, I mean, very strong numbers, as good as we've had. And so when people ask about, you know, where Israel stands, this is a message, and it shows why we have to do more, not less, and read the Haggadah for the messages for today. It's not about the past. It's about tomorrow.
Phenomenal. Thank you, Malcolm. Have a wonderful Chag Kosher V'Sameach. There he is, Malcolm Hohnlein, Executive Vice Chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations.